What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Bring in show music, please.
This is Squawk Pod from CNBC. I'm producer Cameron Costa, and on today's episode, TikTok facing a House vote today, a message to Chinese owner ByteDance, divest or die out in the U.S. Senator Ted Cruz on the bill's path from the House to the Senate.
I don't want to empower the U.S. government to begin censoring and using power against social media companies more broadly. So if and when that bill comes over, I'm going to look at it closely. But the concern about TikTok is real and significant.
And your car could be tracking you and sharing your driving skills with your insurance.
Braking hard.
Tailgating a little bit.
Hitting gas.
Beeping.
Yes, you're in trouble.
I'm not going to have a license.
Former White House Chief Information Officer Teresa Payton on consumers' data privacy.
A lot of times, everything is you're opted in unless you request to opt out. It should really be the other way around.
Plus, Alaska Airlines sharing more information on the door plug blowout from January and on its manufacturing safety checks. CNBC's Phil LeBeau.
I mean, what was it, 89 failures or 89 checks, 33 failures out of 89 checks? Clearly, it shows that they have a long ways to go in terms of manufacturing quality.
It's Wednesday, March 13th, 2024, and Squawk Pod begins right now.
Stand Becky by in 3, 2, 1, cue please.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Squawk Box right here on CNBC. We are live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. I'm Becky Quick along with Joe Kernan and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary.
Got married on Friday the 13th.
And then Scotty's birthday is the 15th.
It's the 15th, the Ides of March. It's crunch time. So you know what it's like, Sorkin. You have twins. Right?
Yes.
Weren't they born on the same day?
They happened to be born on the same day.
I think you mentioned that.
Got to gear up for that stuff.
Meantime, let's talk about this airline situation because it's just remarkable. Alaska Airlines now confirming that the plane that lost that door plug mid-flight back in January, it had actually been scheduled to undergo maintenance later that night. We want to get straight to Phil LeBeau, who joins us right now with the details on, it's been the story we've been talking about, but this detail changes, I think, the entire narrative.
It does, Andrew, and it comes down to the question of should Alaska Airlines have flagged the airplane in question earlier for maintenance before the flights. Clearly, hindsight's 20/20. You could look back now and say, well, why didn't they bring it in before these flights on January 5th? Here's what's happened and what happened back on January 5th. Remember, there had been a couple of instances where warning lights had gone off within the airplane. That, along with some concerns about, you know, was there a whistling sound in there? According to an attorney representing people who are suing the airline, there had been reports of that. Maintenance was scheduled for the day of the flight, that night, essentially when they came back from the last flight, the flight in question. Alaska's safety chief and the airline say, look, we stand by our decision. There is a protocol that we go through when we say, okay, something needs to come in for maintenance. We felt that we were making the right decision at that time. When you look at the NTSB investigation, remember that the preliminary report, when they looked at the airplane and they looked at the door plug in question, the preliminary report says that, according to the NTSB, bolts were not put into the door plug. And as a result, that contributed, was a primary contributor to the fact that the plane, the door was ripped off in mid-flight. That investigation, by the way, it continues. There's going to be a hearing in August as the NTSB continues to look into this incident. And as you take a look at shares of Alaska, keep in mind that the MAX 9 that some of the passengers who are on this flight, they are suing Alaska Airlines. And no doubt, if this gets to trial, and often when you have a suit like this involving an incident and an airline or Boeing or Airbus, whoever the manufacturer is, often these never get to trial. But if it does get to trial, you can imagine that the attorneys for the passengers will have a field day with the fact that this was not brought into maintenance before that flight on January 5th. DOJ, FAA, and TSB, they are all investigating Boeing right now. Guys, they've been in the barrel really for the last couple of months ever since this incident, and deservedly so, given everything that's happened and the revelations that have come out. But really in the last 2 weeks, as more and more revelations have come out, either about this flight or about where things are in the manufacturing of the aircraft, it's been a rough couple of weeks for Boeing, and you have to wonder how much longer this continues here before we start to see things level out a little bit.
Phil, can you just make a couple of distinctions and points here? How much of this does it change at all the dynamic around whether this is a Boeing issue or does it become an Alaska Airlines issue if, in fact, they decided not to pursue the maintenance the way perhaps they should have been? Was this part of a regularly scheduled maintenance program?
No, it was not part of regularly scheduled.
Right, this was something that they planned. Just to be clear, this was I wanted to make the distinction. It wasn't that they were just putting this into maintenance. They actually had already knew that they thought they were supposed to put it into maintenance.
There were a couple of incidents where warning lights had gone off, and they stand by their decision not to have pulled it sooner because, from their perspective, they have a protocol where using predictive apps, et cetera, that they say, okay, this is what we think should be done next. And they believe that they made the right decision, that it was not a careless decision. They also made some, you know, remember, they pulled it from flying to Hawaii, that it could not fly over long distances of water. They wanted it to be flying the route, I think it was going down to, Portland to California, but it was over land. Or Portland back to Seattle. And so they made some changes there.
Hey, Phil, just to point out, I 100%, I don't want to remove any of the problems with Alaska Air or what potentially happened there. But just a reminder for everybody who hasn't been following us closely, this is a plane that was delivered to Alaska Air 2 months before. So this was a brand new plane.
It only had 154 cycles.
Right.
You know, one cycle for an aircraft commercial airplane is takeoff and landing.
And the idea that there were no bolts put in that door, that didn't just contribute to it. That's the reason the door plug blew off to begin with.
Absolutely, Becky.
But,
yeah.
But yeah, this plane had
contributing
problems,
factor,
and
yes.
Alaska knew about that for at least several flights before this flight.
Becky, first of all, it's easy for us to look back now and say, well, you didn't see that they didn't have bolts. Remember, that door plug within an aircraft, in the interior, it's not like you can see the fuselage from inside the plane.
I understand that entirely, but the idea that you just brought up, I had not known before about the whistling that was heard inside.
In the New York Times article, the attorneys representing the passengers say that there had been reports of that. That has not been confirmed from that.
We all hear sounds on planes. You know, I look. All of a sudden it goes, and I look over at Penelope, she looks at me, and it's like it's the flaps or something like that. But whistling might get if it's not coming from the galley, I mean, if the air is getting in or out somewhere, that's not a good sign. Is it? And then I still am obsessed with when there's a change made at Boeing, Phil. I mean, we moved the headquarters so it was closer to the lake house and the shore house, so we need it for the CEO. I mean, maybe it would have been better to have been focusing on some of this stuff, don't you think?
Well, that's at the heart of the complaints that are out there regarding Boeing, that they dropped the ball in terms of manufacturing, quality controls. And yesterday they came out and they said that they will be doing their own audit and they're doubling down on their efforts to make sure that they're following manufacturing processes that have been set in place. But clearly, when you saw the initial audit that was done by the FAA, I mean, what was it, 89 failures or 89 checks, 33 failures out of 89 checks? Clearly, it shows that they have a long ways to go in terms of manufacturing quality.
Which is, you had one job, right? Manufacturing quality on an airplane? I mean, isn't...
Well, I think it's pretty telling that, Phil, they're changing their compensation structure so that it's not so tied to making your production quotas and much more tied to safety issues. I think that's...
It's going to be a huge part of future compensation there. But they're a long ways from getting back to where people expected them to be in terms of the manufacturing rate. They're capped at 38 per month, and they're not even building at 38 per month right now on the max. I think they're probably closer to 31, 32. And rightly so, they want to make sure that they get all of the bugs stripped out of the system that are being flagged by this FAA audit, their internal audit that they're going to be doing this month. And I wouldn't be surprised if they do a few more of those internal audits, because they need to make sure that they are doing it the right way, because clearly they have not been doing it the right way.
Phil, it's weird that flights are so hard. I mean, I'm just hearing anecdotally that it's hard to get flights where you need to go. I guess that's not that. I wouldn't think that would happen from delayed deliveries. It's happening because some of these things are getting maintenance. I guess some were grounded. I thought they weren't grounded anymore. I thought we should have been back to normal by now.
In terms of the overall industry and capacity?
Yeah.
No, we have far more demand than capacity.
No,
far more
demand than
capacity.
United said that there were groundings for a while. They were working with 10 or 15% fewer planes. That was gone. Now they actually need deliveries of new planes to satisfy the schedule.
Right.
Okay. Amazing.
Well, it's not just, and remember, Joe, it's not just Boeing. It's the fact that Airbus, look at how far production dropped during the pandemic. And as much as Boeing has its separate issues, but as much as Airbus would love to crank up production and move at a much faster rate, it can't. Engines are not being produced at a quick enough pace because the pandemic, so much institutional knowledge walked out the door. You just can't flip a switch and say, okay, let's start building these engines. Whether you are Pratt & Whitney, General Electric, Rolls-Royce, there is a limit to how quickly they can go. And so if you're not getting a lot of those core elements of the aircraft to move quicker in terms of production, you can't get final assembly moving as quickly. And we really brought down capacity over the last couple of years. The demand has snapped back to a certain extent. We're at pre-pandemic levels. You just are not seeing the level of deliveries at that rate.
Okay.
Phil LeBeau,
thank you for walking us through a story that I think is just about as troubling as any these days.
Is a Rolls-Royce the Rolls-Royce of engines? Or is it just like a... You know what I mean? I mean, is it like, you know, how something is the Rolls-Royce?
Cadillac of toasters, maybe.
But it's probably not. It's probably, I don't think the Rolls-Royce is the Rolls-Royce of engine. I think it may be okay, but is it known to be the best?
So no. What is?
You're saying are Rolls-Royce engines better than GE
engines? No, I don't know. I'm just saying, you know, that's an expression. It's the Rolls-Royce of whatever. But in this case, I think I'm fine with the Pratt & Whitney. Aren't you?
Well, we don't think it's an engine issue.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying in general. Never mind. The Rolls-Royce of... You're the Rolls-Royce of morning anchors. See how that works? You're welcome.
I'll take that.
You're welcome.
Saudi Arabia is serving up a big offer to dominate professional tennis. I don't know if you remember, we talked about the prospect of this happening after the Liv deal. The country's public investment fund reportedly offering $2 billion to merge the men's and women's tours. The Telegraph now reporting discussions were held with ATP officials at the Indian Wells Open, currently being held in California. The deal doesn't include the four Grand Slam tournaments. A Saudi-led tour would mean potentially bigger paydays for players.
And this is so interesting.
The beginning of the golf. This is the beginning of, when they did it with golf. Yeah. Now, this was the next sport you could do it with.
Because they're all independent contractors.
Because they're all independent contractors. Yeah. Golf is, I mean, I've suggested that one day it's possible that you'll see them go to basketball and say to LeBron and Steph and a couple other people, we're going to create a 3-on-3 league, you know, a summer league. And we'll pay everybody $1 billion to have a sort of fun, crazy league. Why wouldn't they?
Damn, I thought you said to news anchors. But that's not... I really thought you were going
there. I thought
there.
You're not a news anchor.
Oh, that's... No, I'm a news anchor. I'm not a journalist.
Oh, okay. Got it.
Everybody, I mean, you can read that anywhere.
Cheese will be next.
Coming up on Squawk Pod, TikTok facing a big vote on the Hill. First the House and then the Senate. Senator Ted Cruz on what lawmakers want from TikTok owner ByteDance and why.
Understand the objective of this legislation is not to eliminate TikTok, but to put it on the same footing as Facebook and Google and YouTube and get the Chinese government out of that business.
The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tasty Trade. Tasty Trade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tasty Trade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation.
Cannonball!
Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.
You're listening to Squawk Pod from CNBC with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Here's Andrew.
TikTok CEO was on Capitol Hill yesterday lobbying against a bill that would force Chinese parent ByteDance to divest the platform or face a ban in the U.S. The bill is up for a vote in the House today, where it appears to have broad support. TikTok CEO focusing his lobbying efforts on the Senate, where the support for the bill is less certain. And of course, there's a little bit more time, given how quickly all of this has happened. We're going to see where all of this goes and whether actually you can actually divest this thing. I think that's the big question. If you actually read the bill, it is possible that it is not really a divestment bill. It is a banning
bill.
Well,
if they don't, if China doesn't allow them to divest.
It's not even about China. Even if you read the rest of the bill,
what's it about?
It's unclear that you could actually divest the business and still run it internationally, meaning you'd almost have to separate it as to a U.S.-only business. Like, it wouldn't even be able to be connected to other parts of Europe or other parts of the world, in which case you really could not do it. And that's become one of the bigger issues about the language in the bill.
They couldn't do just a U.S. version of it?
You probably could not just, it would not make sense to just do a U.S. version of it. Probably not.
Join us now on This and More, Senator Ted Cruz of Texas, the ranking member on the Commerce Committee. Would you be a yes on the bill as it currently stands, Senator?
Well, it depends. It depends what the bill specifically says. I will say this. I'm glad the House is acting. I am deeply concerned about TikTok. I've been very vocal about my concerns in TikTok. We had the CEO of TikTok testify before the Judiciary Committee just a few weeks ago, and I vigorously question him really on two fronts.
Mr. Chu, I want to turn to you. Are you familiar with China's 2017 National Intelligence Law, which states, quote, all organizations and citizens shall support, assist, and cooperate with national intelligence efforts in accordance with the law and shall protect national intelligence work secrets they are aware of?
Yes, I'm familiar with this.
TikTok is owned by ByteDance. Is ByteDance subject to the law?
For the Chinese businesses that ByteDance owns, yes, it will be subject to this, but TikTok is not available in mainland China. And Senator, as we talked about in your office, we built Project Texas to put this out of reach.
Let me point to this, Mr. Chu. There was a report recently that compared hashtags on Instagram to hashtags on TikTok, and what trended, and the differences were striking. So, for something like hashtag Taylor Swift or hashtag Trump, researchers found roughly 2 Instagram posts for every 1 on TikTok. That's not a dramatic difference. That difference jumps to 8-1 for the hashtag Uyghur. And it jumps to 30-1 for the hashtag Tibet. And it jumps to 57-1 to the hashtag Tiananmen Square. And it jumps to 174-1 for the hashtag Hong Kong protest. Why is it that on Instagram, people can put up a hashtag Hong Kong protest 174 times compared to TikTok? What censorship is TikTok doing at the request of the Chinese government?
None. Senator, that analysis is flawed. The analysis is flawed. It's been debunked by other external sources like the Cato Institute. Fundamentally, a few things happen here. Not all videos carry hashtags. That's the first thing. The second thing is that you cannot selectively choose a few words within a certain time
period. Why the difference between Taylor Swift and Tiananmen Square? What happened at Tiananmen Square?
Senator, there was a massive protest during that time. But what I'm trying to say is our users can freely come and post this content.
I'm concerned about Chinese surveillance and espionage. TikTok is controlled by the Chinese Communist government. It has 170 million users in the United States, and it gives the Chinese government the ability to monitor, number one, what they're saying, number two, their physical location using GPS, number three, potentially what they're searching for and what they're doing with their phone. All of that is concerning, and we also know that China has used it to target journalists in particular going after them on TikTok. That's one set of concerns. A second set of concerns is the propaganda that the Chinese government pushes on TikTok and pushes in particular at kids. And I think it is deeply, deeply harmful. You know, you look right now at the Israel-Hamas war that is unfolding. Every age cohort of Americans, when asked, who's in the right? Who do you side with? Overwhelmingly, Americans side with Israel, except for one age cohort. And that is 18 to 29. And we see TikTok in particular pushing pro-Hamas propaganda. I think it is deliberate. I think that is designed by the Chinese government. And so I'm glad the House is acting to address what I think are very serious risks.
Right. The privacy issue seems like it's something that it either exists or it doesn't exist, Senator. As far as the propaganda issue, we had former President Trump had kind of an interesting flip-flop on this. I know you've probably seen it, and there's some swirling around about who he's talked to that it might be maybe even have some campaign financing or something, the gentleman from Susquehanna. But he does make one interesting point. Do you think, I mean, there's Chinese propaganda, and there's propaganda that I'm sure you've noticed on some of the American social media platforms. Pick your poison. They're both bad. But his point was that you get rid of TikTok, you're just giving Meta and all the maybe the perpetrators here of what you would call propaganda, they just become even more powerful.
The thing I don't like is that without TikTok, you can make Facebook bigger. And I consider Facebook to be an enemy of the people, along with a lot of the media.
Is there anything to that?
Well, the problem is that disregards the actual facts of what's going on online. Listen, I'm a big critic of big tech in general. I have been the leading critic of Facebook and Google and YouTube and their censorship of speech. It is an enormous problem. I'm the ranking member right now on the Senate Commerce Committee, which has jurisdiction over 40% of the U.S. economy, including the internet. And if Republicans win a majority in November, I'll be the chairman of the Commerce Committee, and I think protecting free speech online is critically important. But Joe, there's a difference. As much as I don't like what Google or YouTube or Facebook does, they are American companies. They are not owned and controlled by the Chinese government. And it's not simply the algorithm. Let me give you some data from a recent study comparing different hashtags on TikTok versus comparing them on Instagram. The hashtag Tibet was 30 times more common on Instagram than on TikTok. The hashtag Uyghur was 8-1 on Instagram versus TikTok. The hashtag Tiananmen Square was 57-1 on Instagram versus TikTok, and this one's the one that's most compelling. The hashtag Hong Kong protests was 174-1 more likely to appear on Instagram than TikTok. That's not accidental. That is deliberate. That is clearly, I believe, driven by the Chinese government because they want to suppress speech they don't like. And so I think the House is acting to address a real national security issue. And importantly, Joe, what the House has done, as I understand it, is not ban TikTok. And so a lot of the headlines, House votes to ban TikTok, are inaccurate. What the House has done is said China needs to sell TikTok, that the Chinese Communist government cannot own and control TikTok, and if China doesn't sell it, then they will ban TikTok. But understand the objective of this legislation is not to eliminate TikTok, but to put it on the same footing as Facebook and Google and YouTube and get the Chinese government out of that business.
Senator, do you use TikTok yourself?
I do not.
Have you ever used it?
I've seen it. I have not done a TikTok, but, right. You know, I'm also not a 13-year-old girl, so I don't do a lot of synchronized dance routines.
I understand. The reason I ask, and not to defend the platform, I've tried it because I was curious to search for the word Tibet, to search for Uyghurs, to search for Hong Kong protests, because I've seen the same studies that you've seen. And for whatever reason, it's very available on TikTok, meaning you have to type the words in. I mean, that's the only way I found it. It wasn't served directly to me. But to the extent that we believe that the Chinese government is somehow running TikTok, you would think it would be harder to find the stuff. You put the words in, and you can go on a tear. I mean, you can go down a rabbit hole on these issues with some of the most provocative content you could imagine, things that I imagine you might agree with in terms of being very critical of the Chinese government, in fact. And so the reason I mention this is I just wonder whether you have seen some kind of classified or other internal documentation that shows the Chinese government actively doing something beyond the sort of studies that we've seen that say that we're seeing more of this or less of this or whatever, but actual evidence that there's email traffic or telephone calls between Chinese government officials and people inside TikTok saying, hey, tweak the algorithm to do this.
So what I would say is that you're asking the wrong question there. It's not if you go affirmatively looking for content that is about Hong Kong or Tibet, can you find it? It is rather, what is TikTok suggesting to the user? Because one of the most powerful tools any social media company has is their suggestion algorithm of watch this next, and it's how they drive a message. And I'll tell you, our knowledge of this has grown exponentially ever since Elon Musk purchased Twitter, when he went open kimono and he showed how Twitter was consciously, directly driving messaging consistent with their political ideology. And on X, he changed that. I think that is the single most important step for free speech we've had in modern times. You know, I'll give another example of the differential in content. And this is something that I asked the TikTok CEO in front of the Judiciary Committee. I said, how come in China, when Chinese kids are using the equivalent of TikTok, your Chinese product, they're getting videos on math and science and education and discipline? And here, when our kids are using TikTok, they're getting pushed, they're getting suggested, you know, chewing on Tide Pods. I mean, it's dramatically different, and I think the Chinese government has an agenda there. They're not subtle about it.
The product in China is a completely different product, directed in a completely different way, but by the way, is set up because there are relatively authoritarian and draconian rules in China because it's an authoritarian and draconian government rule. The U.S. is a different place. And you have to decide what you want to be. You talk about free speech. Free speech in China doesn't exist.
Well, you're right, which is why none of us should want the Chinese Communist government in charge of free speech and public discussion in the United States. The particular bill, as I said, I have not examined it. If and when the House passes it, it'll come over to the Senate. I'll address it on the merits. And to be clear, there's been legislation introduced on this topic that I think is dangerous, that goes too far. I don't want to empower the U.S. government to begin censoring and using power against social media companies more broadly. So if and when that bill comes over, I'm going to look at it closely. But the concern about TikTok is real and significant. And my objective, if we actually pass legislation, is not to eliminate TikTok, but it is to eliminate the Chinese Communist government's control and power over TikTok. And I think that's a qualitatively different concern than any other social media company.
Senator, we not much time. And I know you wanted to talk briefly about the NIL stuff, the name, image, and likeness. But I got to ask you about the budget and the one introduced by President Biden, because I don't see how, if it was a Republican-led budget, I still don't see how we get below 100% debt to equity at any time in the next 10 years. And I wonder if you worry about that and have a solution. Yeah. How would we do it? How would Republicans do it? I mean, the one Biden introduced isn't going to be law, and it's horrific, but you've got no answers. Republicans don't.
Well, that's not true. Let's take them one at a time. Let's focus first on the Biden budget.
This Biden budget is not a real budget. It is a political campaign document. It proposes massive new spending. It proposes $17 trillion in new debt, so our debt gets worse and worse and worse. It proposes $5 trillion in brand new taxes because, you know, as our economy is struggling and people are hurting, what the Biden administration is saying is let's tax the hell out of job creators, let's hammer job growth, and in particular, it goes after the oil and gas industry. Because, you know, if when you fill up your car, you think, I really think gasoline needs to be more expensive. I really think we need to be spending $10 a gallon to fill up my car or truck. Well, then you may be a congressional Democrat or work in the Biden White House. This is a budget that is out of step. By the way, it's also a budget that does zero to secure the border. It asks instead for more money to fly more illegal immigrants to more cities in America to expand the invasion at our southern border. It is a political document, not a real budget. Now, you said Republicans have no agenda. I disagree strongly. I think the only answer on the economy, the only answer on deficits and debt, is we've got to get GDP growth up back to historic levels. And the way to do that is tax reform and regulatory reform. Instead of massive new taxes on job creators, we ought to be cutting taxes, simplifying the tax code, and repealing the 94 executive actions that Biden has taken to hammer American energy, to hammer American oil and gas, to unleash America's energy dominance. That drives prices down for everyone. That's how we turn things around as we get back to growth.
All right, Senator, we're out of time. We'll get you next time on some of the stuff you've introduced on NIL, if that's all right.
Great.
All right, thanks.
A couple of notes on the interview you just heard. Since that conversation, the House has indeed passed the bill to the Senate. And if you want to hear former President Trump's thoughts on TikTok in more detail, scroll down on your feed. An extended interview with him aired on Our Squawk Box, and you can catch it anytime right here on Squawk Pod. Still to come on Squawk Pod, a surprising report from the New York Times on the cars reporting driver behavior to insurance companies, who then are hiking prices, and not necessarily with the driver's knowledge. White House Chief Information Officer under President Bush, Teresa Payton, on the rights of consumers and the data privacy issues at play.
Businesses do need the opportunity to optimize, modernize, and leverage the data that they have, but we also need the opportunity as consumers to opt into that.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
You're listening to Squawk Pod from CNBC. Here's Becky Quick.
Up and Becky, cue.
If you are one of those drivers who likes to hit the gas pedal every once in a while, or if you ever brake suddenly, or if you ever drive above the speed limit, even when you're on an empty road, you might want to look into the data privacy settings of your car features. This comes after a report in the New York Times that said insurance companies are buying data from third-party brokers that use all those connected features in your car to actually track your driving habits. The insurers then use that data to set your new premiums, and in some cases, that can be pretty devastating. There were reports in this New York Times story of customers who had their insurance rates jacked by double, some who couldn't even get insurance. Joining us right now for more on this is Teresa Payton. She is former White House Chief Information Officer, now Fortalis Solutions CEOs. Teresa, let's just talk about this for a second. People, when they use OnStar from GM or similar things where you can call in and ask for roadside assistance or ask them to unlock your car, may not realize that in many cases, those systems are also tracking every single move you make.
They are. And ostensibly for consumers, this could mean lower prices in the future if they incent you to have good driving behaviors. But the question is, what have consumers opted into? Do they understand what's being collected about them? And then who is the arbiter of accuracy? Because anybody can drive your car. You can loan your car out to other people. And how do they know that those driving patterns and behaviors are specific and unique to you as an individual?
I think the biggest surprise to me reading through this was that that information that they are collecting, they are then selling to third-party brokers, and without you even knowing you were ever being tracked, your insurance rates go up. I mean, we all know about things like Progressive, where you can sign up with your insurance company to say, sure, you can follow my every move because I'm a perfect driver. You get an incentive for doing those things. But this is happening, I think, without most people even realizing it.
No, it is happening. And here's the thing. Businesses do need the opportunity to optimize, modernize, and leverage the data that they have. But we also need the opportunity as consumers to opt into that and to say, I give you permission to monetize my data, and here's how I give you permission to use it. This really speaks to, you know, businesses have a need to, you know, kind of economically leverage data and data modeling. But as an individual, we need sort of almost a privacy bill of rights where we get the opportunity to also monetize our own data and either get discounts, breaks, and know what's being collected. Also, the downside is if you're collecting this type of data at the individual level, it indicates a pattern of life. Do you prefer highways or toll roads or back roads? How often do you drive? Where do you typically drive to? Do you go to urban areas? Do you go to rural areas? Those patterns of life can actually help somebody statistically model what you're going to do next with probably greater accuracy than you would guess about yourself. That data has to be protected as well. So if you've created it, you stored it, you use it, it now has to be protected. So,
not records of how much you're over the speed limit.
Yes, that is exactly what they
rolling are through a stop sign.
Yes.
All of it.
Going over a...
Braking hard.
Tailgating a little bit.
Hitting gas.
Beeping.
Yes. You're in trouble.
I'm not going to have a license. Do you remember that Jim? They said Jim Carrey.
How long were you watching?
Yeah, he said, "Do you know why we pulled you over?" And he goes, "That depends on how long you've been following."
Right.
Exactly. That's horrible. This isn't happening, is it?
It is. It's happening, and people at this point can't get.
It's been going on for the whole time. It's been going on for years.
At this point,
how do I have insurance then?
Because maybe you haven't opted into some of these programs, realizing it. And Teresa, that's what I would talk about. I was thinking about signing up for the new program that's been offered in the car that I bought recently. This changed my mind completely. It is not worth me being able to call OnStar or whatever the equivalent is to say, hey, unlock my car keys for me. I've got AAA for that. Why in the world would you sign into this? And if I do opt in to say, yes, I'm going to sign up for this, am I unknowingly giving away my privacy?
Well, you bring up a great point. I always tell people when you read privacy policies, a lot of times it indicates the lack of privacy you have by opting into the privacy policy. So you have to read those terms and conditions. Most people don't have time to do that. What I would say is, I think the real challenge here is people are opting into programs to save money, but there are programs of data collection happening where you didn't know that you opted in at all to that data collection.
Yeah, this is a different thing. That's what I mean. They're taking this information with, maybe I clicked on a box and said, okay, I understand you're going to do something with my information. I didn't realize you were going to do this with my information. What's the pushback? What could happen to change this?
Yeah, I think what has to happen here is the Hill has to come together and agree on some type of privacy bill of rights for individuals, where because this is not just an issue for the automobile industry. This is an issue across a lot of industry verticals where data is being optimized and monetized, and rightfully so, by businesses to try and give us better pricing and to give them better profitability. But at the same time, there is a duty of care. As soon as you collect data, use the data, and actually share the data with third-party brokers, there has to be some type of incentive, some type of a privacy bill where there is a duty of care for that data. And Becky, you and I need the opportunity to know what we're opting into and opting out of. That's the other thing, too. A lot of times, everything is you're opted in unless you request to opt out. It
Right.
should really be the other way around.
100%. It's buyer beware. Don't sign up for these services. That's what I would say for now. Teresa, thanks for your time today.
Thanks for having me on.
That's the podcast for today. Thank you for tuning in. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan,
Becky Quick and Andrew Ross Sorkin, weekday mornings on CNBC starting at 6 a.m. Eastern and going all the way until 9. Please don't forget to give Squawk Pod a follow and maybe a review wherever you're listening to us. And come back tomorrow. Another episode will be right here. Have a great day.
We are clear. Thanks, guys.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.